This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is just coming up to 7:14. You're listening to Sharmila and Lynn on the Evening Edition. We're now moving on to talk about an issue that has been coming up a lot, actually. And that is the status of child marriages here in Malaysia. Now, on the surface, numbers show that over the last 5 years, we have seen a drop in the number of child marriages happening here. But there are quarters that say that this isn't really reflective of the reality on the ground. And a recent report by UNICEF actually looks at what the current situation is here in Malaysia and what else can be done to handle this issue.
I think it's worth noting that this is coming shortly after we're talking about the situation surrounding dropouts, because more often than not, or rather, there is a pretty direct through line, I think, on these stories where you can see the connections. But just to lay out the groundwork, right? Child marriage is defined as a formal marriage or an informal union between a child. So here we're talking about somebody under the age of 18 and an adult, somebody over the age of 18. And in Malaysia, at least this is from the UNICEF report, 1,500 children, at least that number, marry every year. And this occurs just really everywhere. It's urban and rural settings. It's across all states. It's throughout all ethnic and religious communities. And both boys and girls are affected. But 90% of children married in 2018 were girls.
So there are several reasons why these sorts of things happen, right? According to the National Strategy Plan in handling the causes of child marriage, it's a government organization, and they list five risk factors, among them things like poverty and low household income, a lack of access to sexual and reproductive health education, a lack of access to education in general, as well as you said, poor school attendance, social norms, as well as laws that allow for it to happen. And the reason it's something that we need to be concerned about is that child marriage impacts, it's not just a question of people being too young to actually get married. It leaves married girls more vulnerable to things like domestic abuse. It disrupts their emotional and psychological development. Besides the fact that it basically puts, most often it usually puts a stop to, things that they should have access to, things like education, things like opportunities in life, being able to support themselves, and therefore leads to things like poverty, complications in terms of health and so on. So really it's something that severely disrupts the life of a child. And of course, we often hear that not enough is being done to handle this here in Malaysia.
I don't think we need to belabor the point to look at how the risk factors are directly correlated to outcomes, right? So if you say that somebody has a lack of access to education and poor school attendance, and that is a risk factor, getting married then in many ways restricts your ability to get education and leads to poor school attendance. If you're talking about a lack of access to sexual and reproductive health education and services, child marriage also very often leads to poorer outcomes in terms of childbirth and mortality. So when we talk about this, I think it's just really important to note that everything is very tightly packed, and it's not often that you get to see such a neat way in which a problem becomes a cycle, and the cycle keeps leading to the problem being perpetuated.
So do share your thoughts with us. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We now have on the line with us Sarah Norton-Stahl, who is the Chief of Child Protection at UNICEF Malaysia. Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me. Looking forward to this conversation.
Let's start with the statistics here in Malaysia. What sense can we make of them? What do the statistics show about child marriage here?
Well, the data does show that there was some decrease in child marriages from 2017 to 2018. However, I think that one of the challenges we face here is several. There's a lack of registration, so that means that many child marriages are occurring and they're simply not documented. We don't have a complete documentation of the numbers of marriages. And also data is difficult. It's not disaggregated, so we don't really have an effective and I will say a thorough system of knowing where all child marriages are occurring. So although we can say there was some decrease, again, between 2017 to 2018, we are hearing now that because of the pandemic and because of all the other associated factors that went with the pandemic, school closures, that other factors, poverty, that 2020 may see a rise. Again, we don't have the data yet, but the numbers that we saw so far in 2020 show that there may be a rise. And I'm sure you're aware that there was a publication that came out by UNICEF yesterday, a global publication, showing that the predictions globally are that child marriage is on the rise because of the pandemic. And again, I'm sure you've also seen the estimates about child poverty increasing globally, all these factors, less children in school, absolutely. And all of these are contributors to an increase in child marriage.
And if we look at the ways in which the government has tried to tackle this, the government did establish the National Strategy Plan in January last year, and this was aiming to tackle the risk factors for underage marriage. What changes have we seen since then? I mean, considering, as you rightly say, that we perhaps don't have the full picture of the last year as yet.
Yes, it was a great achievement for the National Strategy Plan to be launched in January 2020. And certainly, as I mentioned in my presentation earlier in the seminar today, UNICEF worked very closely with the Ministry of Women by conducting a study and supporting their efforts to develop that National Strategy Plan. I think that, unfortunately, it was shortly after that strategy was launched that we were faced with the pandemic and the MCO. So all the efforts, the best efforts of that strategy were not really able to be effectively implemented because we were all really paralyzed in terms of just pushing forward on that very, very important agenda. So I would say that a good start was made with the launch, and I believe that there are dedicated groups of persons within the ministry who have made efforts, for example, a technical working group on comprehensive sexuality education has been established now for the past couple of years. It includes members from Minister of Health, Minister of Education, Minister of Women, as well as other CSO and NGO partners and other UN agencies. And that group is very effective in terms of identifying how we can push on certain issues, sexual and reproductive health being one of them, comprehensive sexuality education, trying to look at tools and resources that we can strengthen what's already in place, reviews that have been supported by some of the agency partners to look at what's already happening for sexuality education in Malaysia, what can be done to improve it, what are the challenges we're facing. So I think there's a lot of effort to sort of understand what's happening and where are the challenges and the gaps and what can we do in a multi-sectoral way to address it. There's also undergoing in Malaysia now a research project on teenage pregnancy, which obviously is very closely linked to child marriage. And the study that we conducted that was authored partly by Dr. Noor Azia, our children's commissioner, really looked at some of these issues and what happens in Malaysia. Why is there child marriage? And I think certainly there's clear linkages between this lack of sexual and reproductive health education and child marriage and teen pregnancy, and noting that so many of the young girls who were married, it was because they fell pregnant.
Now, in terms of legislation, back in October 2019, our former Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir, he did issue an order for all states to raise the minimum age of marriage to 18, but not all states agreed to do that back then. Has there been progress on this front?
Unfortunately, there is no recognized progress. And again, I really do attribute part of this to the fact that we are focused on the pandemic. I mean, ever since it's 1 year ago, all energy and attention has been focused on the emergency of the pandemic. And I feel that the issue of child marriage did get less attention during that past year because of that you know, greater urgency, that sense of urgency around the pandemic. What can we do to spare Malaysians from illness and death, et cetera, which is understandable. You know? But unfortunately, as the research article that was published by UNICEF yesterday shows, is that that diversion of attention, all the best efforts that have been put towards ending child marriage, that energy and attention, a lot of it has been lost globally, not just in Malaysia. And so I think that efforts to work with different states and get some support, that those efforts decreased. I mean, certainly we were working in Sabah. We had planned to go ahead to Sarawak. In fact, the Minister of Women had asked us, let's go to Sarawak. Let's do what you did in Sabah. Let's go to Sarawak. And we had every intention of doing that. But then, of course, travel has been restricted. And so these plans had to be put aside. We really hope that, you know, in the coming months, vaccines are here in Malaysia, cases appear to be decreasing, that we will again be able to push in the field and work with the different states on this issue.
So one of the risk factors that leads to this are social norms that condone child marriages. And have we seen any changes or movement in this area? Are there more efforts to address these social norms?
One of the ways that we've been working on this in partnership with LPPCAN is in parenting support, noting that parents have an enormous role to play in guiding their children around issues of child marriage and in discouraging child marriage as an option. And so we did work with LPPCAN in developing a module designed specifically for addressing parenting and child marriage, parenting and sexual and reproductive health. And it's really about helping parents better communicate with their children. And that parents should be more comfortable to discuss issues which are very sensitive around sexual and reproductive health, and also that they should encourage schools to allow sexual and reproductive health to be taught, because there is some reluctance among parents to have this taught at schools. There's a sensitivity around it. So again, that's what we're doing, working with LPPCAN, and I think there's a lot of support from LPPCAN to push forward on this. Parenting and sexual and reproductive health and parenting and child marriage. So that's how we address social norms, is working a lot with parents and with teachers.
Now, getting to that report that you mentioned, one of the problems that you highlight in that report is around collecting enough data on child marriages in the first place. What are some of the challenges involved in this collection of data?
First of all, I think there's a sensitivity about releasing data. I mean, again, the subject of child marriage, particularly when it's linked to issues of teen pregnancy and sexuality, it's very sensitive. There are cultural and social norms that discourage sharing of this information. So there's a sensitivity around sharing data. I'll just say, you know, that's been a challenge. And so it's really just important that we recognize that data provides evidence and that evidence guides us to design the most effective policies and programs. But without that accurate data, we can't really understand where is the problem bigger and what is the nature of the problem. I mean, again, for example, a couple of years ago, I was in the field in Sabah. We were speaking to the native court authorities. And what they really said to us was that there was a complete lack of understanding and awareness of the problem of child marriage. And they were getting a lot of requests for young girls to be married, and they were all being approved. And part of it was just this lack of understanding, lack of awareness. And that's when we really recognized that there was a need for a better effort, a better campaign to reach out to parents, teachers, community leaders, religious leaders, everyone about this issue, so that awareness would help address the social norms.
And Sarah, we have just a couple of minutes left with you. Are there gaps, do you think, in our national response to the issue, and how would you like to see those addressed?
I think the national strategy plan is excellent, and I think it's just about taking it forward, establishing the steering committee and setting a timeline and a schedule for taking action on those several strategies. Strategies there. As we saw today, people are interested. You know, all people from different walks of life are interested to support this. But it's just a matter of having a really fixed schedule and a plan of action to try to really implement that strategy. And hopefully with the COVID impact decreasing, we can do that in partnership with so many. And we really look forward to partnering with Minister of Women and others to implement that strategy.
Sarah, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. Have a good evening.
You too. Thank you. That was Sarah Norton-Stahl, Chief of Child Protection at UNICEF Malaysia, speaking to us about their latest report on child marriage here in Malaysia, the various factors that go into it happening, and the sort of response that we need to see to handle this, particularly because there are gaps in data because of the pandemic and what that might mean in the long term. So share your thoughts with us on this or any of our other stories today. You can WhatsApp us, 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. After the news, we have Popcorn Culture, where we will be throwing back to the Karate Kid from 1984. So keep it here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.